things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Hi.
Heidi ho, Grim gang.
How's it going?
Oh, it goes.
Grim fam.
Grim fam. What? I like that.
I like that too.
Wait.
I like Grim gang. I think that's good.
That's
too.
Because you like alliteration.
That's true. I do like alliteration a lot. Anyway.
We'll figure it out.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy. Jenny. How's it going?
Oh. Do you want to know?
Yeah.
It's bad. Girl's bad, but that's okay.
We're here.
We're here closed up in the spooky lit pod room.
Yep.
In our, like, the door is shut. We're in our safe little space where we can not think about the outside world. And we hope that that's what this podcast is to you.
100%. Oh, speaking of which, do you want to do your bright and shiny?
Yes. Do you want to do yours first?
Yeah, I am happy to do that. So my bright and shiny is every Sunday night, and we're recording this on a Monday. So last night I went and we have family dinner every Sunday night.
So
it is so wholesome and cute. And I just get to spend time with my sisters and my stepmom and stepdad and hang out and laugh and have a good time. And it was a really good night. So I left feeling very... like pleasantly still.
Like your cup is filled.
Yeah.
You have enough spoons back.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. We just laughed a lot. We had tacos. Laura made amazing tacos. And yeah, it was good. It was very good.
Okay. I love that.
How's yours? What's your bright shiny?
I think can my bright and shiny be a people?
It was a people last time, but yes.
Who was it?
Ian.
Oh, shh.
It was going to be Ian. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I stole your bright shiny.
That's okay. It's still going to be a people.
Okay, that's great.
My bright and shiny is a really lovely human named Beth, who made a gross situation really palatable and warm-hearted. I just love people who are... people and able to navigate difficult situations.
Yeah.
And are good at their job.
Mm-hmm.
I just like people who are good at their job.
She's got such a soft soul and also very cut and dry, but in a warm, fuzzy way.
It's hard for this particular situation that, like, I met her in, for her to be, like, both, like, she treated us gingerly, our emotions. But she did not by any means beat around the bush about the situation that was happening.
Yeah.
And I am very grateful for her and the work that she does.
Yeah. Shout out to Beth.
What up, Beth? She doesn't know us personally.
Not
we
really.
Just ran. It's weird that you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Right. We both have had an experience, a very similar experience with the same Beth.
Both very awful situations.
Yeah. But Beth was there to guide my family, too.
So. It's very strange.
Yeah.
That synchronicity, that Beth was there for you in your gross situation.
Uh-huh.
And she was also assigned to my family's gross situation.
Gross situations.
They follow us around like fucking flies.
I want to say the thing that that we keep saying, that could we just not keep doing this anymore? Like the thing that keeps following us around. But the more we say it, the more it happens.
Yeah. We just... have, and I know
there's a reason that we have a podcast called A Little Bit Grim.
Are we going to talk about it ever?
Let's just talk about it.
Unless
you don't want to, in which case I can edit.
No, we can.
Okay.
I think it would probably be helpful, maybe.
Yeah.
Because my mother just got placed in a hospice for terminal cancer that she has, and devastatingly, your father also.
Was placed in hospice care for terminal cancer, and Beth is the operator of the hospice care.
She is the hospice care worker that was randomly assigned to
both
your
cases.
Dad and my mom, and she is excellent at her job and kind and knowledgeable, and I'm very thankful for the excellent job that she did for us and our family and for you and yours.
I feel like she did a really good job of being able to say, like, what can I take off your plate and without that those words.
Yes.
Like, I felt like I had less responsibility when I left my first meeting with her. And I don't think that that was an intentional, like, repercussion of meeting with her, but that's kind of what happened.
Yes, I agree. And it's, you walk into that space knowing that this is quite possibly one of the most terrible mm-hmm. things I could have. You never want to have a meeting for it.
No.
But if you have to...
Especially two people who are not even 30 yet. No. Like,
we're... I will let this be... Let this be said. These are not the first parents we've lost.
No, this is number two, y'all.
This is the set.
This will be number four out of four.
Four parents.
Yes.
Yes. We also have one brother.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah.
We just have... We've had a lot of...
Welcome to A Little Bit Grim, where sometimes it's a lot grim.
It is so grim.
And the way that we deal with that is by finding things that are worse than what we've gone through and then be able to laugh about them.
It's a weird kind of solace, but here we are. We have a podcast about it, and guess what? You're listening.
Yeah, welcome.
And this is a grab bag episode.
Which, you know, I'm glad that we're starting with this. That is also a bright shiny because these are so... fun for us, and they are the more lighthearted, like kind of just the crazy things that happen that you're just like, I'm sorry, what?
Excuse me, I'm sorry, run that by me just once more.
Can we
more.
Start over, please?
Yeah.
So I am very glad to be telling you some of these stories today, but yeah, do you want to get us started?
I will start. My first story is titled Stop Fetishizing Tuberculosis.
Stop. Oh my god.
Okay. And I'm just gonna
TB kidding me.
That was on the fly. That was excellent, Taylor.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Okay, and I know this is a weird soapbox to be on, but I need y'all to hear me out, okay? I know this sounds really weird, but tuberculosis historically is deeply romanticized. And I know it sounds weird, but just like, listen, okay? When it first started killing people, it was called the good death because it seemed to only affect upper class people. So it wasn't stigmatized.
Ah, okay. And I can see that.
To die from it was kind of like, quote unquote, the way to go. And the idea or belief taught that there was an ideal way to die, which is quietly, calmly, clean, painless.
With poise and grace.
Yes. Or at the very least, like, bearing your pain, like, very stoically, right? Gross. Is surrounded by your family and your friends, accepting of your fate. You've had enough time to make your peace with those around you and to, like, impart your final wisdom and words. And I know this is very weird. It's going to get weirder.
Okay.
Tuberculosis was the ideal disease for this. You died very, very slowly. The disease forced you to slow down, to rest. It was almost like an ideal way of living. It could produce people who are contemplative, focus on the spiritual and intellectual, who died like beautiful, peaceful deaths in their beds with their families. And women who contracted this disease at the time were considered pure, beautiful, and it was fetishized by men.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm about to tell you. Tuberculosis fetishized dying young and beautiful and pure and clean. It's found throughout literature, like Beth from Little Women. She was too good and too pure for this world.
Yeah.
Not to mention or even get into like the drug addiction aspect of the culture period. And that's what it is at this point. It's a culture of tuberculosis. And it got really popular. Like, how many fantastic romantic works mm-hmm. are based around tuberculosis? And we saw a flourishing of garment and cosmetic fashions that were aimed at making women look like they had tuberculosis.
Stop.
Pale, skinny, weak, slumped over in chairs, needing assistance when I feel faint. Like, it became very aesthetic. at the time a bony frame and long limbs, and rather than trying to fatten themselves up, which like was the look, they used cosmetics to portray a feverish complexion, shiny eyes, pallid face, and flushed cheeks and lips. Hence, blush and lipstick. We still do these things to this day, and we fetishize it even though we don't know it, and we have tuberculosis to thank. So literally, now that you have this information, look at how society views, like, perfect, beautiful women.
Yeah.
Like, dainty, porcelain,
a little dusty, if you ask
frail,
me.
Being strong is, like, still frowned upon. Having muscles is a turnoff. Eating too much is a turnoff. Being strong-willed is a turnoff. Tuberculosis culture helps make these things and still thrives today. So thank you for coming to my very fucking weird TED Talk.
Wow.
Isn't that wild? It's like you don't even think about like these trends that are like put upon us, but that's...
Yeah.
Heroin chic from the 90s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a whole thing to grow up with.
Yeah, that was a weird time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Satine dies from tuberculosis in Moulin Rouge.
Well, and isn't she... very pale and flush.
I mean, Satine is the reason I have red hair. I saw her when I was 11 and was like, done.
Red hair forever.
Red hair forever.
You have had red hair forever.
Yeah, legitimately, I was 12 years old when I dyed my hair red and I thought my dad was going to end my whole life. And he was like,
what's happening?
Your mom's a psychopath.
She let you do this.
Yep, but it's just hair and I have stuck with it since then, so. All right. I am actually going to read you a listener story.
Yay!
And this is from our friend Quinn.
Quinny Quinn. They're like our very first stranger fan.
Yes. So Quinn, hello, hello. I'm going to read her story. I did have to pare it down just slightly, just for time.
Her story?
Their story? I don't know.
Did she send us pronouns?
No.
Okay.
Send us your pronouns, please. Please. We don't want to misidentify anybody.
No.
So we're going to go with they.
Okay.
Until we know better. All right. So Quinn. They say, hello, it's Quinn. So this is my first time writing a listener story ever. I've always wanted something to happen, but also like not at all.
Sure.
I've never seen a ghost or had any experiences. And while I'd like to see something, I'm not taking any risks. Now, trigger warning for gun violence, of course.
Oof.
So, I just graduated from Northern Illinois University. Of course, I graduated during the worst job market ever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I studied CGI art. Among my extracurriculars, I took a lot of photography classes. While I was taking this class, the Douglas Stoneman shooting happened in 2018.
Ugh.
On February 14th, exactly 10 years apart from my school shooting. I remember watching the live stream of the police and news. It was... sinking in how it had been a decade and nothing changed in terms of gun laws and safety. For some reason, this really affected me, so I decided to do some of my photography assignments based on our school's history of the shooting. I did a shit ton of research on the event, and it made me even angrier. A lot of students noticed the anniversary, but I feel like doing such an in-depth research on this, meeting survivors, and having a class in that very same place put me closer. Mm. At NIU, everyone knows of the shooting that happened on February 14th, 2008. We all do things to honor the five students who were lost in Cole Hall. At the time, it was ranked number 3 in fatalities in mass shootings. Yeah. The trauma and pain still linger today. I remember on the anniversary, I'd have professors tell us their experiences. My friend who grew up in the town said she remembered what happened and just remembered when it happened and just watching the news. The whole town was affected. It's one of those flashbulbs moments for them. They'll always remember where they were when it happened. We have a memorial for the 5 students who died. I spent a lot of time here as I used it for my art project surrounding the lack of change in our system around guns and safety laws. I spent maybe a good 4 hours in just a small area taking pictures and thinking a lot about these students. The items that were placed near their names, flowers, teddy bears, and letters. One read, Miss, and then it's a blank, my maid of honor.
Mm. Ow. Oh,
I know.
Ow.
Oh.
Oh.
I know, it's very sad. So she did actually, Quinn did research for us. So here's the story of the NIU shooting, February 14th, 2008. I got in contact with one of the survivors of the shooting, and she was now serving as a police officer on the campus after surviving this. I sat down and talked with her, and she described her experience. She had an oceanography class in Cole Hall. 122 students attended that day, and she knew one of the victims of the shooting as well. Cole Hall looks like your standard student auditorium. It has doors in the back that the students enter through, and then doors up front where the professors comes through. That day, the shooter kicked through the doors up front and just started shooting. He had a black t-shirt that read terrorist with an image of an assault rifle. He had a belt with two magazine holsters, a holster for a handgun, three handguns, eight loaded magazines, and a knife.
God.
Right. Students reacted in a variety of ways. Some hid, some ran, and some were in shock and didn't move. He shot about 50 rounds. He even walked up and down the aisle to target students who were hiding between the seats. When there was nobody left to shoot, he shot and killed himself before the police could reach the scene.
Ugh.
The woman I talked to said she didn't realize that she was in pain. She remembers turning to run and just ended up on the ground. She didn't remember much other than being airlifted to the hospital. She had been shot and injured in the face and neck.
Mm.
When police reached the auditorium, they discovered 55 unexpended rounds. This guy had more ammo and would have used it if there would have been people left. 23 people were shot, and the shooter took 5 lives that day. The scene was chaotic, flocks of students running and shouting, "He's shooting over there." Some police attended to those who were shot and injured. Others gathered the other students into a nearby building to be interviewed. It took all day to make sure the entire campus was safe. Rumors floating around that the shooter was still out there and going to target the library or dining halls next. Now I'll give you a brief description of the shooter. For some fucking reason, in Wikipedia on this event gives him a whole ass section. Basically, it's stereotypical shooter profile, white male, considered quiet but well-regarded student.
Hmm.
He was a student at our school and then attended graduate school at another university down south. Now here's the fucking kicker. This guy went to grad school for social work.
What?
Some other weird stuff is after the shooting, police intercepted packages sent to his girlfriend, which consisted of a gun holster, ammunition, a textbook on serial killers, the book The Antichrist, and now the Wikipedia page states that he had stopped taking his medication a few weeks before the shooting. He also left a suicide note and told his girlfriend goodbye. Do I believe that this takes away his responsibility? Hell no. If I get it, if you're struggling and feel like going to sleep forever, life can be pretty brutal. But if he planned to kill himself, he did not have to kill others and traumatize the whole campus and town. So Cole Hall got a renovation after this happened. However, the area still sends chills up my spine. Sure, the auditorium is newer, but just thinking about what happened there isn't making up for the padded chairs.
No.
I had a math class in the infamous Cole Hall 101. The math class was shit. My professor just rambled about his opinions on politics, how much he loved Excel spreadsheets, and just taught us how to do math wrong so we could learn it right. What a dick. How was he hired? We all hated him. It was a damn miracle I passed the class. My friend and I would stay up all night long doing homework. I went to an extra hour of math help with my TA each week. I do art. I do not need to know standard deviation. What the fuck?
As a fellow liberal arts major.
Same.
Who majored in music, performance, and German language. I had to take statistics three fucking times.
Oh, I took statistics, but I was relatively good at statistics.
Yeah, no. I'm just bad at all types of math. I get it. I get it, Quinny boy.
All right. Anyway, our campus had a shooting threat one day. Of course, the day I had to attend that class, our school sent out a safety alert email and text, meaning that the big boys at the university had noticed it and had to acknowledge it. Oof. And on February 14th, now, if there's going to be a shooting again, God forbid, the most likely place would have been the same place. Ugh. Now, I was low on absences for this class. I could only miss one more day. I contemplated going or not going to class. I ended up deciding not to go, but the professor canceled class anyway. I imagine because all of the students were afraid to go.
Sure.
This campus is wild. During the time I've been here, someone completed suicide after a drug trip. Just a floor above me, some dude got stabbed in one of the dorms. A literal gang war was happening on and around our campus. A student almost died due to the school not keeping up with ADA requirements. And our president used student funds to pay for his wife's vacation.
Well, God dang. Get it together.
You better look and make sure that your student loans were allocated properly.
renegotiate that interest rate, bud. Yeah.
So glad I'm not a student anymore, but I live in the same town, so I'm sure more shit will happen. We always blame the vast expansion of cornfields. The only reason our town is there is because of the university. Besides the school, it's cornfields and Walmart.
Sounds like the Midwest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my small town story. It's somewhat notable. There are pictures from that assignment, and they did attach those. They said, excited to hear more episodes of the podcast and give Donna a hug from me. I've included a picture of my own cat because cats. His name is Nebula, and her name is Nebula, and she likes to interrupt too.
Oh my God, can I see the kitty?
I didn't print it out, but I will send it to you.
Can we post it on the Instagram?
I don't know. I'll have to ask Quinn.
Quinn!
I'll ask. I'll send a DM.
Okay.
I love
that. Was horrible. Thank you.
That was horrible. I love Nebula. Not yes. The story. That sounds traumatizing.
Right. I would be very afraid to go to class every day.
Same.
Very, very afraid.
I'm not sure. I feel the same every time I hear the words, not to like bring up all of the mass shootings that our nation has endured, but every time we hear the words Virginia Tech, it like makes my heart skip a beat.
Yeah.
Because we were young when Columbine happened. Like, yeah. I remember when it happened, but we were...
It was 1999, right?
Babies.
Yeah.
Babies. But, like, I remember Virginia Tech being, like, the school shooting that...
We were in high school for.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. I pass Kent State University anytime I go to my corporate office.
Oh.
And there was a shooting there as well. Mm-hmm. And that was during... right... after Vietnam, so it was definitely before our time, but I did, that was probably the first true crime incident that got me into like disasters and true crime.
Yeah,
was the Kent State shooting.
That's horrifying. I could not.
Yep. Ugh. Anywho, tell me a different story.
Oh, this one is do you know Mary Shelley?
Yeah, she wrote Frankenstein, right?
She did. She was a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, she wrote Frankenstein.
Yes, well, listen, it's worse than that.
Okay, great.
And I'm going to struggle with her last name for whatever reason. Like, my brain and mouth cannot compute it at the same time.
Okay.
So, Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley.
Okay.
Was the daughter of Mary Wollstonecraft, an earlier warrior for women's rights in English society. Her mom was, like, a crazy feminist.
I love that.
Yeah, and she, like, ultimately, like, got a bad reputation for, like, a while until, you know, women got more rights.
Oh.
And we're like, oh, no, she kind of knew what was going on.
She was right. She was right.
Anyway, so Mary Shelley's mom, Mary, married William Goodwin. Shelley went on to make a name for herself beyond her famous parents and is, of course, best known for her gothic horror novel, Frankenstein, or aka the modern Prometheus. She was also married to a romantic poet and philosopher, Percy Shelley, and helped him edit and publish his works. In 1814, then teenage Mary began a romance with him, and he was... Girl, he was already married.
Nope.
But, you know, some shit happens.
Oop.
The couple conducted a 2-year public affair.
They did not even care.
No. And they traveled. They just, like, gallivanted through Europe. Right. Like, nothing was happening. During which time, Percy's then-wife, Harriet, was pregante.
Oh, no.
Yes. And in 1816, Mary and Percy married after Harriet committed suicide. Mary and Percy began meeting each other secretly at Mary Wollstonecraft's, Mary's mother, grave at St. Pancras Church in England. And it was there, on her mother's grave, in the pouring rain, that she lost her virginity. And she wrote about it.
Oh, no. That's... Oh.
It's a little yucky. It's pretty yucky. I know. And okay. Liz, I read this like as an aside comment on another article that I was reading, and I was like, wait a tick.
Hold on.
That's bizarre.
Rewind.
So I started digging into her.
Okay.
And that is not the weirdest thing that she did.
Stop.
Right. I will go on.
Please do.
Okay. So, Sadly, Mary Shelley's life was marked by death. In addition to suffering the death of her mother shortly after she was born, she also lost her half-sister Fanny to suicide, as well as losing three children in or shortly after childbirth. Shelley suffered once more in 1822 when her beloved Percy drowned in a sailing accident when his boat sank during a storm off the coast of Italy. Though Percy was cremated, his heart was calcified and unable to be burnt with the rest of his remains.
What the fuck?
So she kept his freaking heart wrapped up in his poems in her desk where her son found it after she had died.
I'm uncomfy.
So, yes. She was a weirdo.
Okay. I love that this is her
authentic self.
Authentic self. I'm glad that she wasn't some a kept woman in 1800, just like, I wonder what life is like outside of these walls.
Oh, nay, nay.
No, she was like, I'm trying to bang it out on my mom's grave. I have a heart in a box.
Weird as hell.
She fits in.
I just think it's Grim Gang.
Welcome to the Grim Gang.
What is up? The mother of sci-fi carried her husband's heart in her desk drawer
after Shelley
she banged him on her mom's grave.
Is she our mascot?
Maybe, I think so.
I need a picture of Mary Shelley holding donut.
Oh my God. Do you want me to like commission a portrait?
I kind of do.
Where's Quinn? She does digital art. Quinn, get in here.
Hey, come help us.
Take a picture of donut from Instagram. Google Mary Shelley and just like make a thing.
Make it happen.
We're going to frame it on the wall.
Oh my God. Okay. No. All right. I'm going to tell you another story.
Okay. What is it? That's what we do on this podcast.
Shocking.
Spoiler alert. Taylor's going to talk about stuff.
All right. So I need you to hang in there because I have a sticky situation to tell you about.
I already.
And this one may even turn you into a recluse.
The crazed look in your eyes is what did it for me. I know it doesn't translate via audio.
Yes, let's talk about visual things.
But it was there.
In our audio podcast.
We should stream this.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
So what happened was, in 2014, in Missouri, a family purchased a very upscale home.
Okay.
I believe it was purchased for nearly $500,000 doll hairs.
Oh, that's, you know, just a couple doll hairs.
Yeah. Reasonable.
Hmm.
Sure, I'm sure the mortgage is totally palatable.
Yeah, certainly not $2,100 a month.
No. Soon after moving in, they realized that they had quite a spider problem.
Wait!
No!
Yeah. All the puns make sense.
I'm glad they're starting to come together.
It's all coming together.
In my web
of lies.
Of stories and lies.
Okay. Is it a lie or did this really happen?
No, it really happened. I'm sorry to tell you.
Oh, frig.
All right. So they realized they had a spider problem and it wasn't just any spider. It was a brown recluse.
Oh, of course. The stepsister of the Black Widow.
Yes. So the brown recluse are one of the three spiders in North America with venom that could require medical attention.
They'll kill you. It'll kill you. Let's just like call it what it is.
The articles I read said that to be fatal, you would have to be bitten multiple times by multiple spiders.
Okay, well, how many spiders were in this house?
Too many. Okay, so Brian and Susan Trost were the unfortunate owners of the home, and they were forced to vacate due to the infestation. A recluse expert said that there were probably about 5,000 brown recluse spiders living within the walls of the home.
One, fuck that guy. A brown recluse expert. Also, run that number by me one more time, just so like my brain could absorb it.
5,000.
I want to die already.
This is also going to want to make you die.
Okay.
Susan said that the spiders would ooze out of the walls.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry. Ew. I'd rather have blood.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay, they sued the previous owners for not disclosing the spider problem and ended up racking up $100,000 in legal bills. Yeah.
Oh.
To rid themselves of this, oh God, Taylor, you're so stupid. I wrote arachna problem.
I hate hate this.
So stupid. They had to put 9 giant tarps over the house that quite literally made it look like a circus tent.
Really?
It was red and blue. We'll post a picture of it on the Instagram.
Did they have to run it from a circus?
No.
Where else do you find that many tarps?
So there is a super specific type of like extermination company that can do big projects like this, that they have these tarps on standby.
Ew.
What? Would you like to know how much it costs to have this kind of a extermination done?
Listen, the amount of sweat that I am producing right now.
Yes, tell me.
$14,000.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yep. They had to prep the home with putting all the tarps over it. And they pumped in gas that would kill these tiny monsters. And the gaskets pumped in at, like, I think they said 65 degrees below below zero.
Yeah.
To kill all these motherfuckers.
Oh, my God.
The house went into foreclosure.
Shit. I'm not paying a mortgage on that.
Right. So your girl got a little bit on the stalker side.
Okay. Because
I found the address.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You...
Of yeah.
course you did.
So I found the address.
Okay.
Popped that guy into Zillow.
No. Is it still on the market?
It was recently sold.
To whom?
I don't know. That I couldn't find out. But it got put on the market June 2020.
Really
and
recent?
And just sold at the end of August. And it was listed for a whopping $645,000.
No.
And that's what it sold for.
They increased the value?
Right.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to start just in our, like, real life job line of work. Uh-huh. When something sits unoccupado.
That is money getting flushed down toilets.
It's money getting flushed down the toilets, but, like, also no humans means that, like, bugs really like it.
Uh-huh.
So, like, you missed one singular mingular brown recluse boy.
And he's about to go Aragog on this whole thing.
It's already done. It's already done. You're telling me that I'm... No. I'm... So, do they have to release that? I know they have to tell you, like, if somebody, like, killed themselves or there was, like, a crime.
I don't...
Realtor followers? Somebody tell us the rules.
I think they do. I don't know if they have to tell you about past problems that have been eradicated. But like
eradicated.
Oh my God. I knew it was coming. But yeah, crimes, violent deaths they have to tell you about. But if somebody dies peacefully in the home, they don't have to tell you.
How do we define a peaceful death?
If they die on their own.
Oh, like somebody didn't stab them.
Right.
Mm.
Oh, but suicide is also a violent death. So they would have to tell you about that.
Okay.
But if they died in their sleep, had a heart attack, like natural causes.
Okay.
So that's my arachnophobia story of the day.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I hate it deeply.
You're so welcome.
Mm, I'm itchy inside.
Love
More
you.
So than usual. Oh, I forgot what my last one was. Okay.
We're going to learn together.
We are going to learn. This is a good one. You're going to like it.
All
okay.
Right.
It's a little shorty. In the 1940s, boats and towers in the East Indies began receiving a series of distress calls from the Dutch ship SS Oorang Medan.
Uh-huh.
A radio operator aboard the troubled vessel sent the following message in Morse code.
Ooh, fascinating.
SOS. We float. All officers, including the captain, dead in chart room. And on bridge.
What the fuck?
Probably whole crew dead. It was followed by a series of meaningless dots and dashes. And then later, two words came through clearly. And those words were, I die. After the chilling message, there was nothing more ever heard from the ship again.
What?
Later, when the Oorang Medan was finally located, every single member of the crew was in fact dead. Their arms and legs and torsos were found frozen and contorted. Their faces displayed both shock and terror, their mouths open and silently screaming. Worst yet, there were no exterior wounds or any evidence left of what killed these men. And to this day, it remains unsolved.
Why?
But why though? You're never gonna know. We don't know. I die.
I
die. All right, goodbye. I die.
Oh no.
Which I hope is my last words.
I die.
I die. Gotta go. I'm outie.
Like belly up.
Isn't it horrifying?
That is the nightmare fuel I didn't really need, but
no. Quite a ghost ship.
Yeah.
Which was the first horror movie that I ever watched.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, it super scarred the shit out of me. Like, I was way too young, and everybody got sliced in two by a rope.
Oh, God.
Have you seen Ghost Ship?
No.
Oh, don't. It's so gross.
I mean, I probably would like it, though.
Yeah, probably. Everybody gets poisoned. There's, like, a lot of puke.
And oh.
It's gross. Huh. Yeah.
Okay. The first horror movie I ever watched was Halloween. The original Halloween.
Oh, like Michael Myers Halloween?
Yep.
I have not seen it.
I was 8.
Okay.
And I was still, like, going trick-or-treating. And my parents are divorced. So I was with my mom, who literally did not ever watch me. And so I think I was watching probably something on TV, and then that ended, and then Halloween came on, because it was Halloween, mm-hmm. Like trick-or-treat night.
Ah.
And so she came and got me and saw what I was watching, and she was like, are you gonna be okay? And I was like, I'm fine. And so then she put me in my Halloween costume, and my dad came and got me to take me trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
And I made it about halfway down the block before I started bawling. And he had to take me home.
Spoiler alert, Taylor was not fine.
It was not fine. But then, because I was I was aware of my mom's shortcomings as a child, so okay. I didn't want to tell my dad what had happened, because mm-hmm. I knew that he would be mad at my mom.
You didn't want her to get in trouble.
I didn't want her to get in trouble, so I just would not tell him why I was crying.
You were just sad. I'm just sad.
It was a very trying time.
I love that.
All right, so let me tell you about the woman that was found alive in a funeral home.
What?
In Detroit recently.
That's not where you should be alive at.
No. So this one is fairly recent. I believe it happened at the end of August 2020. So very, very recent.
Oh, like that was like 30 days ago, less than.
Yeah, two weeks.
Oh, yes.
Well, 30 days from the time that this comes out, probably.
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. So a lot of people have already heard about this. Like, it was going around on Facebook a little bit, but I'm here to just tell you.
I haven't heard about it.
Okay. So a woman was found alive.
It's alive!
At a Detroit funeral home!
Not the place to be alive at, Mr. Ma'am.
Tamisha Beauchamp. Beauchamp?
Beauchamp.
Was a 20-year-old woman living in Detroit. Paramedics were called because she was found unresponsive. They performed CPR for almost a half an hour before they consulted an emergency room doctor. And the doctor pronounced the patient deceased based upon medical information provided from the scene.
Like a doctor rolled up and like, she's dead as a doornail.
They called him. Like
on the telephone?
On the telephone. And were like, hey man, like,
where's the coroner?
I don't believe he showed up.
Ah, well, that's...
But do coroners show up for...
Listen, I grew up in Wells County, and my uncle is the coroner, and he shows up to every single soul who kicks the bucket in Wells County.
Really?
Yeah. Like, if you're not in a hospital, like, a doctor can call a time of death.
Okay.
Otherwise, like, a coroner has to come. I do believe.
Okay. I guess I had never really considered what a coroner's job was,
I don't think
to transport bodies. I think I thought
that's what an EMS does.
Okay. Well, the EMS are here.
Okay.
So the doctor pronounced the patient deceased based on medical information provided from the scene.
So a paramedic called and was like, yo, she's dead. And the doctor was like, okay, chill.
Time of death.
Yeah. Great.
After she was pronounced dead, her godmother said that she thought she saw Tanisha moving. Tamisha, and everyone went back in and did a whole nother round of CPR, checking for pulse, checking her breathing, dead as a doornail. Girl gone.
Okay.
So, an hour later, she was delivered to the funeral home and began
and delivered like an Amazon package.
Yep. Wrapped up in her body bag. And they unzip the body bag to start the embalming process, and bitch is alive.
No!
With what? Her eyes open. Ah! Can you imagine unzipping that body bag?
What if it's like you're an intern, and it's like your first day on the job, and you unzip a bag and somebody's like,
hello? Did you ever watch CSI?
No.
Okay, so one of the very first episodes of CSI is one of the things that I decided to watch during quarantine because I was losing my whole mind.
Sure, sure.
It's a girl that works at the... I don't think it was the funeral home. I don't know where the CSI people work, but it's a new girl baby, and she's doing her slicey diciness, and she loses her whole mind, throws up, can't handle it.
Yeah.
And then my man Grissom comes in and, like, calms her down. Okay, so an hour later, she was delivered to the funeral home, began the embalming process, but when they opened the body bag, her eyes were open.
Ah!
Talk about being scared to death. There is an investigation happening to try to find out if this was the result of negligence on the part of the EMS or the police department or the fire department, or a case of Lazarus system syndrome, which there is a delay in circulation after CPR. Both the fire department and police department swear that they followed all policies and procedures. However, two of the paramedics have had their license suspended.
Ooh.
And four of the firefighters are put on paid administrative leave. The paramedics are suing the state of Michigan for suspending their license without due process.
What?
And Tamisha is still in critical condition to this day. Or at least as far as the research I
can find. Do they know what's wrong with her?
I know that she had cerebral palsy.
Got it.
But I don't know if there was any other conditions that would have...
like, contributed to...
Yeah. So...
Well...
Yikes.
Yikes, indeed. The best of wishes...
to Tamisha.
To Tamisha, this poor woman, fighting for her life.
Again.
Well, it's a good thing they found it before they... before they started embalming instead of...
Ooh.
After.
Yeah. There was a whole side topic that I almost went down about in the turn of the century, they had the coffins with
the bells.
The bells, mm-hmm. And then there were like tubes that they put down there
for
so
air.
That you could breathe. I was like, that's terrifying.
A fun fact, that's where we get the term graveyard shift for people who work third shift, because there were individuals who were hired to keep track of the graveyard all night in case mm-hmm. somebody rang the bell or was trying to rob the graves.
That's what I thought it was. I thought it was just keeping track of grave robbers.
Nope. Also people who would ring the bell.
Yikes. So that's all I have for you.
Thanks for listening to our short little itty bitty grab bag.
Not so short today, but that's okay.
Well, that's all right. I think we have another long episode. Maybe. I need to look at a calendar. Time isn't real.
This is going to come out the first week in October.
Okay, so the episode before this was very long as well.
Yeah. Love. So, happy October. Spooky season.
Oh, my God. Okay. Happy. It feels so premature here in the real life.
Here in real life where it's September 13th.
Yeah.
Hey, we're nothing if not on top of it.
Listen, we're happy for you.
To be listening to this in October. We wish it was October now.
Yes, we do. But it's not.
No.
That's fine.
All right. We'll talk at you soon.
Follow us on the social media.
Yeah. And tell us if you have a story you want to tell. You can DM us on the Instagram or you can send us an email.
littlebitgrim@gmail.com.
That's the one.
Find us.
All right. Bye.
Goodbye.